Okay, good evening. I'd like to call the Bartlett Public Library District Committee of the Whole meeting to order. It is 6:30 p.m. Roll call.
Order.
Here.
Sias.
Here.
Berry.
Here.
Lucaro here. Olson.
Here.
Davey.
Here.
Hopkins.
Here.
Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Town Hall. All right. Then we have the report on the annual audits.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. So passed out for you this evening, you have two documents that Director Nance would have sent out to you electronically as well. If you want to follow along, I did put page numbers in the bottom right corner on here just to kind of make that a little bit easier as it goes through our administrative process. So we'll start with the annual financial report. If you'll turn with me in those page numbers to page 5 of 54, which is titled the Independent Auditor's Report. You may have noticed this year a new format to the Independent Auditor's Report. This is related to a change in auditing standards that we're required to follow as part of our audit process here. Main change, not a whole lot changed in terms of the substance of the letter. It is more of a form change here, but one of the nice things they did is they put the opinion top, front, and center of the, you know, the Independent Auditor's Report here, so you don't have to going to turn halfway through the opinion to find that information, or turn through the document to find that. So we will be issuing a clean, unmodified opinion on the library's financial statements as of the prior fiscal year ended June 30th, 2022. As noted in the next paragraph, we conduct our audit in accordance with generally accepted auditing standards. Those are set forth by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, or AICPA. The next section on that page includes management responsibilities for the financial statements. Just a reminder that management ultimately is responsible for the fair presentation of the financial statements. The following page, you'll see our responsibility as auditors to conduct our opinion or conduct our audit in accordance with those generally accepted auditing standards and provide an opinion on those financial statements there. So the bullet points in the middle of the page there outline a little bit more detail in terms of the procedures that we go through and what's entailed as part of that audit. We'll cover anything on the following page, but it does just note some of the other information or other components of the audit there and what our opinions are, or if we do not provide an opinion on those just based on the nature of the information. From there, if you'll turn with me a few pages back, so page 9 of 54, the page numbers there, this is the first of your basic financial statements titled the Statement of Net Position. Statement of net position for the library includes all of your long-term full accrual components to the audit. So your capital assets, your net pension asset, for example, for the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund, long-term liabilities, as well as any deferred outflows or deferred inflows of resources, which are a category that the governmental accounting standards order GASB gave us a few years ago. Key number on this page to monitor is the second line from the bottom, your unrestricted net position as of June 30th. So your unrestricted net position as of June 30th was just under $711,000. So these are the dollars from a economic resources perspective that are available for future operations for that there. We'll talk in a few moments here on the governmental funds balance sheet about your fund balance and your general fund and those amounts as well. So just a little bit of a different picture presented between this and the governmental funds balance sheet. The following page is your statement of activities. Statement of activities is a required statement. The format is mandated here, so your expenses for your activity, your expenses are reported in the far left column. Your program revenues, so charges for services in your case, are reported in the middle section there. You come to a net amount there, and then your general revenues fall in place underneath there as well, bringing you to a change in net position of just under $750,000 for fiscal year 22 on that same economic resources measurement focus. Turning to the following page, this is the balance sheet for governmental funds that I mentioned just a moment ago. two major funds reported for the library this year, your general fund as well as your IMRF and FICA fund. The major fund determination is a process that we go through at the beginning and completion of our audit to determine which funds meet the criteria for presentation as major for that. In the general fund, looking at the third line from the bottom, you'll see in the fund balance section, your unassigned fund balance. Your unassigned fund balance at June 30th, 2022 was $1,336,114. Now, I know the board recently passed a fund balance policy, and I think revisited your fund balance policy in terms of how much you were keeping in reserves on that. One of the things to consider with that, when you calculate that ratio, that six-month reserve, there's two different schools of thoughts on that. Not something you necessarily need to, you know, come to a conclusion on in the immediate term, but food for thought on that is you can either look at that fund balance amount, that unassigned fund balance, as a percentage of your current year expenditures. So we'll compare that. So your current year expenditures in the general fund were about $2.2 million. Or you can look at that number as a percentage of your budgeted expenditures for the following fiscal year. Seen it done both ways, it's really a board preference in terms of what metric and what calculation you look at for that. But if we compare that amount to your six-month target reserve, if you use the current year expenditures, you're slightly over. You have 60% on that there, which would allow you the chance to, you know, potentially move some funds over to the special reserve fund if you so choose. If you went with the FY23 budgeted expenditures, you're about 48%, so just under that 50% threshold. So in that case, like, we wouldn't have a transfer made from those operating reserves in the general fund there. So food for thought. I'll pause for a second there just to see if there's any questions so far on any of that information. So far, so good. All right. Turning to page 13 of 54. Statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance. Again, same major funds presented here, non-major funds all in that third column. Looking at the third line from the bottom is your net change in fund balance here. General fund balance increased just over $535,000. IMRF about $51,000. Non-major and aggregate about $52,600. So your overall fund balance has increased just under $534,000 for fiscal year 22. From there, I'd ask you to turn to page 22 of 54, which is in the notes to the financial statements. Looking at the second paragraph under section 2A, one of the things we test for is compliance with the library's policies, including your investment policy there. The library's investment policy does require that you have collateral pledged or that all of your deposits and investments are covered by FDIC insurance. Our testing did indicate about 133,000 deposits that were not covered as of June 30th for that. It appears from at least what we can tell from a testing standpoint there is that the bank was using, I'm getting a little technical here, so bear with me, but the bank was using the par value of those investments in their calculation. When we test those amounts, we look at the market value for that. Reason being, market value, if you had to liquidate those investments to cover those deposits at that particular date and time, you would not be holding that investment to maturity. The bank would not be holding that to maturity. That's what you would get at that particular point in time for that there. So that's what we're looking at in terms of the amount there. Carolyn, I don't know if you've had a chance or if the bank got back to you with any additional information on that, but.
So what we had talked, I would just need to call and make sure.
I would highlight, you know, what I provided on that, and just to say, here's what we were showing as the total deposits for the library as of June 30th. Here's what we were showing as pledged collateral for that, and then have them, you know, respond that, you know, this is based on, you know, we did use par value for that. They just may need to change their approach on how they do that there, or provide you additional response in terms of, you know, why that is the case there. From there, we can turn to page 37. Page 37 is your schedule of changes in the net pension liability and related ratios for the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund. So I'm going to do a standard auditor loop here. I'm going to give you good news as of one point in time and then tell you that, you know, we're in 2022 and the market is going to change a lot of things for us here. But as of December 31st, 2021, which is the most recent information available for IMRF, the library's actually reported a net pension asset for the first time. So a net pension asset of about $89,000, just under $90,000 as a net pension asset, which means you're about 101% funded at IMRF as of December 31st, 2021. So we would expect, based on market performance, that that's going to go back to a net pension liability in, you know, December 31st, 2022 valuation for that. However, looking at your, you know, historical funded ratios, you know, where you've been at, where you continue to likely be at from an IMRF standpoint, you're very well funded there, continuing to fund, obviously, what IMRF tells you that you have to fund for that. IMRF continues to be one of the best funded plans in the state, if not the best funded plan in the state from a defined benefit standpoint. So, and then taking into account too that those changes in your funded status are not going to all impact your contribution rates in 1 year. That's smoothed over a 5 year period there. So big market increases don't mean you, doesn't mean your rate goes down drastically in the next year. Market, you know, decrease won't have the same impact there. So remain well funded as part of that. Overall, in very good shape from an IMRF standpoint. The last item that I'll cover for you within the audit report is going to be on page 40, which is the notes of the required supplementary information section here. Annually, the library goes through really kind of dual-faceted budget process. As part of your budget process, you have your appropriation amounts, which reflect your legal authority to spend on that, and then your operating budget amounts, which are your budgeted amounts that you're, you know, you're trying to operate within those guidelines. Generally, an appropriation amount is going to be a higher amount there, so you do have that legal authority to spend those dollars that you need to spend as part of that. Operating budget here, we did note in the second to last paragraph here, just a few funds that had expenditures, not significant dollar amounts here, but amounts that were in excess of that operating budget there. Something to monitor as part of that. You know, from a budget standpoint, one of the key things on budget data is the year after year value in that budget data as you look through that process there. So if you do look at this and say, well, our actual expenditures ended up being higher than this, do we need to look at those budget amounts there? I wouldn't necessarily say it needs to be something that you're doing just to be compliant with that operating budget there. You may have known expenditures that go over that and you know exactly what relates to that there. However, just for your overall budget process, there may be some value in just looking at those. The nice part about just a budget process, and if you do make changes to the operating budget there, those aren't subject to the same requirements and detail that you're required to go through from an appropriation standpoint. So you don't have to go through and hold another hearing on that or, you know, publish anything related to that information. It's simply just the board would choose to do that should you do that. Should you so choose, you can set a threshold for that, you can monitor that, but that's something that, just some food for consideration on that. Yes?
I think the reason that we have this situation is that our appropriation was deliberately low in order to be able to allocate taxes to other line items. But we knew going into the fiscal year that we were going to expend more than what we taxed for in order to bring down the fund balance. Now, would it not be appropriate for us when we choose to do that to amend the budget to reflect the intended spending?
You certainly could do that. Yeah, that is something you could do, and depending on the nature of if you have a, and actually hit that example, you know, where you have a planned drawdown of fund balance for that, there's a couple different ways from a presentation standpoint that can be reflected within a budget document. Some organizations that we work with do that relatively regularly in terms of using fund balance as part of a balanced budget consideration on that. And when they do that, what they, you may see it as a line. It shows up in a little bit of a strange spot as other financing source on the financial statements there, but called generally something, you know, reappropriation of surplus or something along those lines there. So it shows that budget being balanced as part of that. But, you know, definitely would, would certainly, would certainly be something that you could consider in terms of the presentation of that budgetary data if that's the route the board wanted to go.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Yes. You mentioned earlier on page 22 about a non-FDIC insured investment. Is that, we're not doing anything wrong, that's just the nature of perhaps interest rates rising and making the asset look different? Is that
so what, so sure, I can clarify that. So we look at the total bank balances. So for Fifth Third, we look at all of the bank balances there and compare those bank balances to what is covered by FDIC. And then Fifth Third, based on your investment policy and based on the agreement you have with Fifth Third, has, they basically pledge securities, pledge collateral that's held at an outside institution to cover any amounts that are in excess of the FDIC. So FDIC, $250,000, I forget the exact, I think it's 2.1, don't quote me on the exact amounts there, but a couple million dollars of collateral that was pledged for that. So this amount that's reported on 22 is, if you take the library's balances, subtract out the $250,000 FDIC, and then the pledged collateral that Fifth Third has pledged to the library for that, that's the amount that is not covered by the pledged collateral or the FDIC insurance. So,
but if they verify that they're doing it, the par or the market.
So that would be the one question to ask there is the par value versus the market value of that collateral. What does it all mean, at least at the end of the day on that, is if, as of June 30th, if Fifth Third were to go under, go out of business, unlikely, but if they were, our approach of looking at it, and I would say the industry standard from an audit standpoint would say, okay, well, market value would tell us that if we had to liquidate as of this date, here's what you would receive for that. In this case, the market value was less than the par value for those investments. That would be, you know, related to the, you know, the interest rate environment that we're currently in for that. That being said, potentially there would be up to $132,000 would be the potential exposure you have as of June 30th based on the market value being short of the par value for those pledged investments.
So then do I just have to have them do a higher collateralization?
That would be, you know, the, based on what their response is, I mean, that would basically be, I think, them, you know, explaining to them or having a discussion with them that, you know, the expectation is that market value is going to be adequate to cover the library's deposits, you know, your pledges for that there. So yes, that would be, you know, my advice on that.
Okay, thank you. We'll take care of it tomorrow.
Any other questions on the annual financial report? In terms of open items here, really the only thing that's open on this is just we're waiting on the actuary for the other post-employment benefit or the OPEB valuation. So once we have that information in there, we'll update that, provide an updated draft that's reflective of those amounts being in there, and then work towards finalizing that report. So, with no questions on that, we can turn to the other document I provided, which is the auditor's communication to the board of management. If you go to page 4 of that document. This document is made up actually of really two separate pieces. The first being what used to be referred to as the Statement on Auditing Standards or SAS 114 letter. SAS 114 letter requires includes our required communications with those charged with governance. On page 4, I just want to call your attention the two middle paragraphs in the qualitative aspects of accounting practices here that deal with this, just references any significant accounting estimates that are incorporated into our audit. What we've noted as the significant accounting estimates are related to the pension and other post-employment benefit valuations, as those are actuarially determined numbers. We highlight those as the main, the key estimates or significant estimates within the audit report. On the following page, find various other categories, looking at the second bolded section, corrected and uncorrected misstatements. We did not have any misstatements that we did not record as part of this, or past adjustments, as they're called. We did note that there were several entries that were considered to be material adjustments as part of our process. So that's adjusting journal entry 2, 4, 7, 8, and 9, which I'll cover in just a moment here. So if we'll turn back to page 7, we'll go through the entries that were posted as part of this year's audit. The first entry here is to record the library's accrued payroll as part of this. This was a calculation that the library had done. It just, however, was not posted in the trial balances that we received. So we did do our testing based on the amounts there. Amount-wise, it is, there was a payroll that went out right around year end. Those amounts did come out of the bank on June 29th. That's why you see it only being 40,000. Your last payroll in June did come out prior to the year end on that. So that's reflected in the expenditure amounts we looked at in the report. So the accrual there. Entry 2, which is the longest of the entries here, just relates to the proper recording of property taxes on the library's financial statement. So property taxes factor in a couple different components. You have your balance sheet components, there's your property taxes receivable, as well as the amounts that are considered to be unavailable, so your deferred inflow piece of that, and then correcting the amounts reported as part of that based on the actual collections and the year intended to finance as part of that. Entry 3 relates to just correcting the prepaid amounts in your general fund. This was your July of 2022 insurance payment that was actually initially included there. So the initial trial balances, there were 13 months of expenditures for the medical insurance reported there. Entry 4 is one that I would expect to see annually as part of this based on our conversations in prior meetings, prior discussions on this. This is just updating the GASB 68 amounts for the Illinois Municipal Retirement Fund. Entry 5 is related to your insurance expenditures here. In FY21, the amounts were paid prior to year end for your insurance, and then in FY22, they were paid after year end. So there was 2 months or 2 years worth of insurance expenditures showing up in the property insurance, work comp, and liability insurance amount. So that is reversing out the amounts related to those and the allocated cash between the respective funds for that. Entry 6, another one that, based on previous discussion, would just be an annual audit entry as part of that, just adjusting the compensated absence balance. Entry 7 is just allocating cash. Basically, all the cash comes out of the general fund in terms of how the books are throughout the course of the year. This is just allocating those amounts so that all the respective funds presented within the audit are presented in balance. Last two entries here, entry 8. This is related to the additional accounts payable for the parking lot project here. In discussions with Carolyn on this, came up with an estimate based on what the completion percentage was for the parking lot as of June 30th there. Accrued an additional amount to record that as part of the capital asset as well related to the parking lot. And then finally, entry 9 is just recording the capital asset. So of those 9 entries, I would say 3 of them are ones that you would expect to see. The others are ones that would be expected to be addressed and handled prior to us getting the trial balances from the accountant on that. So discuss these, provide a kind of walk through all of these with Director Nance on that as well. So from there, if we turn back a few pages to page 13, I'll close my comments this evening just going through the second part of our document here, which is the management letter, or the old SAS 115 letter. In the current year, we had one comment that we're presenting relates directly to those adjusting journal entries that we just went through here. So just the overall internal control or financial reporting, just ensuring that the proper entries that should be posted prior to the audited trial balances or the adjusted trial balances being provided as part of the audit process. Throughout all these comments, you'll see the responses that management has provided on these. Also within this document, if you go to page 17, you'll see the status of the comments from our June 30th, 2021 audit. Four comments there, segregation of duties. We've talked about this just based on the limited staff here. The library continues to monitor and look for opportunities to segregate duties there. It's just you have a limited number of people involved in the process, so there's a risk associated with it. You know, as the board, it becomes a matter of discussion with management as to what that risk tolerance is there, something that we'll point out as a risk, but, you know, again, it's at that lowest level, proficiency level, from our standpoint there. It has not something that, based on our review and our testing, elevates to a significant deficiency or material weakness. Second comment on internal controls over payroll. You can see management's response in there. This one is in progress. I believe November is the go live date with the electronic timekeeping on that end. Internal controls over IT, that comment was considered implemented based on our testing and our notes this year. And then finally, comment four, just the year-end close procedures, which is just a status essentially related to what we went through for the current year comments. So any questions on this document? Yes.
On page 13, under other comments, it mentions that second line that will impact the college in the future. I think that should be district.
Yep, absolutely. Thank you.
Page 19, the year-end close procedures talks to adjustments that weren't made going back to 2018.
Yeah, that was the initial year that comment was provided there. So just the appendix there, and that's why it relates to it there. We can...
So this is not entries that still haven't been posted from that period.
Correct. This is just the initial comment that has carried forward related to those year-end adjustments.
Okay. Thank you.
Carolyn, if I can just make a suggestion, under the management response under deficiencies number two, if it could say with our current payroll company instead of stating the payroll company that we're involved with. Anthony?
Sure.
Am I taking the name out?
Sure. So just
contact was made with our current
taking out payroll last name.
Wherever it's noted.
I see there are four. I see four references there. That would be great.
Four.
Okay. Yep, we can modify that certainly. And I think, Trustee Olson, going back to your comment on question four there, I think I'll modify that comment just to be a little bit more generic there, just to alleviate any questions that remain to those specific entries that were there, but just highlight that it is still applicable as of this year based on the current year entries for that. So thank you for that as well. I will just close saying, I just want to say thank you to Director Nance and the rest of the staff for all their assistance in providing everything we needed for the audit on that. Appreciate that, and I think we're in good shape as a word. I think that we'll get the OPEB valuation in place for that and then be able to get everything finalized for you. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd like to extend thanks to Sickage for the services they've provided for the last 5 years. We have to move on because of requirements, and we hope that we'll find a comparable partner for the next 4 or 5 years.
appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any town hall? I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
I'll move. Second.
Thank you. Thank you. Roll call. Boyer?
Yes.
Zayas?
Yes.
Barrett?
Yes.
Carl, yes. Olson?
Yes.
Danny?
Yes.
Hoppins?
Yes. We are adjourned at 6:59.